welcome to World Crisis Radio. I'm your host, Webster Tarpley, talking to you from Washington, D.C. And we have another jam-packed program for you this week. We're going to have Phil Berg from Philadelphia on several segments ahead, and he will give us a report on the lawsuit to kick Barack Hussein Obama off the ballot on the grounds that he is not a natural-born citizen of the United States, either not natural-born or not a citizen, or both, or the other question, a possible dual citizen and the eligibility for the presidency there, also a big legal question mark. Phil tells me that papers have been served, summonses have been slapped on Barkey and his gang, the Democratic National Committee, Howard Dean, and the Federal Elections Commission has had their summons for quite a while. So we'll be hearing from Phil Berg. Now, this is the Friday after the Republican convention concludes, and we now face, of course, a grim panorama with no ideal outcomes, no really good outcomes, but distinguishable outcomes. Some are better, some are worse. It's time to be great realists. We don't need any strutting or insistence on one's own righteousness and one's own refusal to go into the blood and sand of the arena. It's time to go into the blood and sand of the arena and try to get something done, if that's at all possible. And I believe quite strongly that it is. But you've got to be a great realist about it. Now, what's the outcome? Last night we saw McCain give his speech. Naturally, the thing that strikes you about McCain is the utter insanity of his economics. He's preaching, of course, to a convention full of Babbitts, of petty bourgeois boosters, crazed by the Depression in many ways, although denying that any world economic depression exists, but still crazed by it, ironically. So these people are very low on the ladder of self-consciousness and awareness, but perhaps not as bad as an Obamazoid, certainly not as bad as an Obamazoid. And this is what we're now looking at. So if you look at McCain, what does he want to do to deal with a world economic depression? He's preaching the reactionary Republican gospel. We've heard it so many times. It's the old Robert Taft, Mr. Republican, skull and bones, right-wing gospel. It's the one that we get from Milton Friedman of the Chicago School and Friedrich von Hayek of the reactionary Vienna School, the anti-government demagogy. Government is always the enemy. Government is bad. Very few attacks on Wall Street, almost none. No mention of the 1 quadrillion-plus derivatives cancer that is destroying the world. Nothing about corporate malfeasance. A few barbs at the oil companies. That's almost de rigueur these days in U.S. politics. But the petty bourgeois recites his creed, fundamentally bewildered by the world economic breakdown crisis. You cannot understand a $1 quadrillion derivative breakdown crisis with banking panic going off, dollar hyperinflation expressed in food and energy and education and healthcare and insurance within the categories of this small town dream world of, as they say, hard work, responsibility, and self-reliance. Well, what good does hard work, self-reliance, and responsibility do you when the entire world economic system is now coming down like the temple on top of Samson, the temple of the Philistines? This is not the way out of a depression. What does McCain talk about? School choice. Well, we know what school choice is. School choice is a code word for breaking the teachers' unions. Every reactionary Republican wants to destroy every union in sight, but naturally they can't say it that way, so they say school choice. It's also a step towards the destruction of one of the great achievements of 19th century U.S. life, which is the existence of free, universal, and compulsory public education, the sort of Horace Mann in the United States or Jules Ferry in France, the idea that everybody should go to school if you want to have a nation. The reactionary Republicans don't want to pay for that anymore, so therefore they preach school choice. It means vouchers that help you if you're rich, but if you're not rich, you can't get anywhere with a voucher. And, of course, shutting down the school system, creating charter schools and other kinds of fallback options. He wants to deregulate still further. We're into the Depression and the result of deregulation started under Carter by Brzezinski and the Trilateral Commission and has gone on. And you can see the deregulation of the banking system is at the root of this immense derivatives crisis. He wants to lower the corporate income tax. This is funny. It's quixotic because almost nobody pays the corporate income tax of the really big ones. General Motors and General Electric goes year after year never paying corporate income tax and boasting about it. He wants to cut the federal bureaucracy. Again, these sorts of cuts in the federal budget essentially create more depression than they ever deal with. The notion that you get out of a depression by balancing the federal budget. Pure Herbert Hoover insanity. McCain has designs on privatizing Social Security. He was smart enough politically not to talk about that last night. But we know that that's what McCain is into. What else does he want to do? Keep taxes low, preserve the Bush tax cuts for the rich, small government. And then he says he's going to veto the first earmark bill that comes across his desk. Now, some of us are scratching our heads. If he says he'll veto the first one, does that mean he'll veto the first one and let the other ones come through? What does it mean? Will he veto all of these earmark bills? This is another petty bourgeois furor, another petty bourgeois fetish, the idea that these earmarks represent the ultimate in corruption. Of course, they don't. Some of them do. Some of them are full of earmarks, some of the Abramoff type. Abramoff just got his four-year sentence this past week, richly deserved and actually rather mild for what the stealing that Abramoff did and those sweatshops he was running in Saipan and similar places. But the notion that the earmark is the essence of evil is, of course, fantastic. Some of these are actually economic development and, indeed, the only economic development that the current system allows after 40 years of reactionary Republican domination. He wants to build nuclear plants. Now, there are some positive things. McCain says he wants to build some nuclear plants, and he wants drill, baby, drill. This, of course, opens windows of opportunity, which the Democrats do not have. Let it be clear that the grim picture that we have of McCain is more than counterbalanced by the fascism of Obama and Biden and their myrmidons, their Kool-Aid cult of fanatical followers, another even more crazed wing of the petty bourgeoisie. As we therefore add this up, we would have to say under McCain-Palin, especially with the economic policies enunciated by McCain, the crisis will get worse. The full brunt of the depression coming in the next 4 years, starting from January, cannot be mastered by these methods. As a matter of fact, most of these methods only make it worse. The only things that he's got that are positive are the nuclear plants and the drill, baby, drill, because these increase production. And that's the way you get out of a depression. You produce your way out of it. You've also got the problem of how to destroy masses of fictitious capital in the form of the quadrillion, or by now 2 quadrillion for all we know, in derivatives. However, McCain has one overriding benefit. He keeps Obama out of the White House and blocks the fascist corporate state. So that's the starting point for any realist. We'll be back in a minute.
Radio.
here in Washington, D.C., in the Katzenyama, the hangover after the Republican National Convention. We are surveying the grim landscape. But again, there are some outcomes that are better than others. So let's focus on them. Let's not spend time whining. Remember, if you don't get active, you will get radioactive. So now it's time to get active. The question of the competing choices, the McCain-Palin ticket and the Obama-Biden ticket, have to be solved in a comparison of these two. These are the only ones that are realistic alternatives, although the other ones, the Nader, the McKinney, Rosa Clemente, and indeed the Barr, why not? Factor those in, and even a couple of more after that. These can be used as adjuncts and flanks to a strategy as soon as you figure out what the situation is between Obama on the one hand and McCain on the other. And, of course, you've got to also locate this in the mechanism of government, thankfully designed by John Adams based on his reading of Machiavelli, based on Machiavelli's reading of Polybius. We need divided government is the question. The separation of powers and divided government is one of the few lifelines that we have. We've got the hope that Machiavelli and John Adams dead are more powerful than Obama and Biden and Resco and Soros, Rockefeller, and the Trilateral Commission who claim to be alive. That's our only hope. One of our watchwords and cardinal principles is the absolute necessity of perpetuating divided government. We must have divided government. We cannot have a one-party state under these horrendous conditions. This is certainly something that anybody can understand. If you were for Ron Paul or for Kucinich, whatever you came from, divided government is the absolute prerequisite for a not a successful outcome, but for avoiding the very, very worst. In other words, we've got to have the president of one party and the Congress of the opposite party and hope that they fight themselves to a standstill. Our position is we're confronted with two unacceptable coalitions. We've got a fascist coalition around Obama-Biden, with the Obama-Myrmidons providing the shock troops, the Sturmabteilungen, the Squadristi. On the other hand, you've got this conservative coalition tending towards reactionary. Let's say we've got a reactionary presidential candidate and an actual conservative, Palin, as the vice presidential candidate. Now, one of the things you've got to realize, based on the history of 1922 Italy and 1933 Germany, is that when you're confronted with a choice between a fascist and a conservative, even though the conservative may have all kinds of overtones that are oppressive, bellicose, dictatorial, otherwise unacceptable, you had better understand that the conservative is the lesser evil. The fascist is the greater evil, because fascism is a one-way ticket, as some people were talking about even on television programs. One of the things that Mussolini, to take the Mussolini example, did is at the beginning, some of his policies may have been successful, but the other thing that he does, of course, is to destroy the institutional basis of an opposition, so that once you begin to go into fascism, it rapidly becomes a point of no return, because the institutions that might be the basis for mounting a challenge to fascism are destroyed by fascism. That's why it's fascism. That's the difference between fascism and a normal top-down dictatorship. Under the top-down dictatorship, not all the competing institutions are destroyed, because they can't be. Therefore, when confronted with the alternative of fascist rule or a continuation of reactionary and conservative rule, again, I would say reactionary conservative is maybe that's the way to describe the Republican ticket, you've got to realize, no matter how much you don't like the choice, that fascism is worse. Fascism is the abyss. As Georgi Dimitrov, the communist, he was put on trial for, they tried to frame him for burning the Reichstag in Berlin in 1933. As he pointed out, there's just no comparison between just another bourgeois regime, no matter what it is, even with generals, and fascism, which has got this aspect of a bottom-up mass movement, anti-authoritarian, radical, left cover, anti-institutional cover, anti-parliamentary cover, and so forth. There's no comparison. So go back and read the memoirs of the sad survivors of Italy 1922 and Germany 1933, and you will see they'll say, oh, we thought we were already under fascism, or we thought that von Schleicher or Brüning, we thought that was already fascism. I mean, we looked at Italy, we thought that it was already among us in the form of Brüning or von Schleicher or these other people. No, and of course, the only way you learn your lesson on that is when it's too late. Unless you know history, you're going to take the leap, the flying leap into the fascist abyss, and you won't even know it. Now, this then leads us to the following conclusions. Fascism is the greater evil. We need to perpetuate divided government. Based on the polling right now, the generic ballot, right, which you can follow, polls are done on that all the time. They don't get as much attention as they would. The generic ballot points to a larger Democratic majority in both houses of Congress, most likely at the present time. Of course, upsets and sharp turns are never excluded in a crisis like this. But it looks like we're going to have a Democratic Congress, even more Democratic than it is right now. That means you're probably going to get more of the monster Nancy Pelosi on the House of Representatives side. There is an attempt by Hillary Clinton to make herself the Senate Majority Leader. This has very interesting possibilities. She would then become the leader of an opposition, be it against Obama, be it against McCain. Obviously, the possibilities of creating an opposition fast among Democrats will be far greater if McCain is in the White House. And I guess that gets us to the point, is that it looks like the only lesser evil that can be hoped for under this situation is a Republican presidency based on the defeat of Obama and a Democratic Congress. This will create partisan gridlock. Partisan gridlock is exactly what you want. Partisan gridlock is the best you can hope for. And that would then give us a period of time, I don't know how long, as the Depression hits more and more, as the world economic breakdown crisis works itself out, the rhythm is slower than 1929 to 1933 because this is truly a world system. It has included, under globalization, virtually every corner of the world in its coils of primitive accumulation. So it does slow things down. This means, therefore, that under those circumstances, you'd have to work for the emergence, of course, of the only thing that will get you out of the crisis, which is a full New Deal programmatic alternative, a return massively, completely, aggressively, uncompromisingly to the typical measures of the Franklin D. Roosevelt 1933 New Deal, in order, in particular, to wipe out the $1 quadrillion-plus of derivatives. A reactionary Republican will never do that, but some kind of a labor-based Democrat hopefully might. So that's the only possibility. Is if you don't get the New Deal, you will not get out of the crisis. It's either New Dealers or corpses over the next 5 years. We'll be back in a minute.
For listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Tarpley speaking from Washington, D.C. We're just doing the post-game show on the Republican National Convention, and now we see the two leading alternatives of the official parties here of the regime for the November election. So what do you do faced by this? Number one, perpetuate divided government at all costs. That's life and death. It's got to be the president of one party, the Congress of another, and hope that they fight each other to a standstill and give us the blessing, the unspeakable blessing, the precious blessing of total gridlock, total partisan gridlock. The second thing you've got to do is defeat any fascist mass movement seen in the field. Who has won? I've heard people say McCain's a fascist, Palin's a fascist. No, Bush is a fascist. Yeah, Bush may be a fascist as an individual, but there's no fascist mass movement there. Who, pray tell, has a fascist mass movement or reasonable theatrical media facsimile thereof? There's only one answer. Barkey, Obama has the fascist mass movement. Call them postmodern fascists. Call them social fascists. That term has a little bit of a checkered past, as the students of Weimar Germany will know. But maybe social fascist, as applied to Obama, is exactly what you need to get the idea of a left wing of fascism, which is how it starts. Remember when Mussolini founded fascism at Piazza San Sepolcro in Milan in 1919, you've got these trade union activists, syndicalists, as they were called. You got some disgruntled special forces veterans from the Arditi. You've got socialist party members who were pro-war. Today that would be anti-war, but that's perfectly possible. And you've also got then these Cubo futurists, the various Marinettis and other literati, artists, sculptors, architects. The creative class were for fascism in 1919, and they may be again. Creative intellectuals, unfortunately, are no guarantee against anything. So the fascist mass movement has got to be slammed. It's got to be defeated. These would be the Myrmidons for Obama, who broke into the Iowa caucus and the Texas caucuses, and goon squad attacked the people for Hillary and others for Edwards who weren't voting for Obama, the trolls you see on the Internet, and, of course, this media brigade. We really ought to do a whole segment on the unspeakable, despicable display of hatred of women and misogyny that has gone on in response to Palin. Naturally, here we are interested. We find Palin someone with interesting possibilities, certainly not to be dismissed, probably more promising than many others. But the question of hatred of women, this is a key part of fascist ideology. Some people may wonder, why are they so dead set against Hillary first? Why do they have such gusto in the attack on women? And, well, that seems to be an ideological feature of fascism, and we can see this going back to the 1920s. Here, fascism is hatred of women. This is a segment of my new book, Barack H. Obama, The Unauthorized Biography. Barack H. Obama, The Unauthorized Biography. Paper copies probably available as early as next week. Send an email to info@progressivepress.com, info@progressivepress.com. One scholar on fascist movement says, the novel atmosphere of fascist meetings struck many observers during the 1920s and 30s. All mass movements employ symbols and various emotive effects, and it might be difficult to establish that the symbolic structure of fascist meetings was entirely different from that of other revolutionary groups. But now, another fundamental characteristic of fascism was extreme insistence on what is now termed male chauvinism and the tendency to exaggerate the masculine principle in almost every aspect of activity. This has also been termed the radical misogyny of fascism, or its flight from the feminine, manifesting itself in a pathological fear of being engulfed by anything in external reality associated with softness, with dissolution, or the uncontrollable, which they thought was female. No other kind of movement expressed such complete horror at the slightest suggestion of androgyny, in other words, the mixture of male and female characteristics. Part of the problem was, this is fascism, and that's something of what we see today. So, indeed, a lot of the people who took part in the scurrilous attacks on Palin are fascists. They don't know it yet. But that will come soon enough. Now, the other thing, of course, is we can argue if we look at McCain's speech. We can see that he's on the full Orwellian anti-Russian line. Thank God he didn't repeat this piece of obscenity. We are all Georgians now. But that, of course, is still the idea. There's no use kidding yourself about that. The entire foreign policy establishment of the U.S. is on the full Orwellian, Russophobic, warmonger line. That's just a given. The only question is, what are you going to do about it? He says, let's see if we can get some quotes from our friend McCain. Anyway, he goes through a big blather about Georgia. We've got to catch up to history. We can't have Russia. He says he wants good relations with Russia, not a new Cold War, but we got to step up against aggression and international lawlessness. Russia cannot go on rejecting democratic institutions and try to invade a small democratic neighbor. Wow. Saakashvili is a fascist demagogue sponsored by Soros and Brzezinski, the CIA, the National Endowment for Democracy, and so forth. So here's the thing now. There are two aspects that I think make McCain less of a dangerous warmonger than Obama, because Obama has basically said the same thing. Obama and Biden have both embrace the full Russophobic, anti-Russia, horrendous doublethink line on the Georgia crisis. Here are the two features that make it somewhat different anyway. First of all, the question of the facelift for imperialism. With Obama, you get a new look imperialism. It's an imperialism with left cover. It's far more demagogic. It can pose as a hyper-revolutionary, pseudo-revolutionary alternative in, say, many places in Africa. Of course, the goal is to kick the Chinese out, but it also overthrows governments in much the same way the neocons did. But it doesn't have to do this by direct invasion. It does it through demagogy, through soft power, through subversion, through the Gene Sharp Albert Einstein Institute, through the National Endowment for Democracy, through human rights, humanitarian concerns, and God knows what else. Remember, Obama can bring out 200,000 German lemmings in Berlin. Suppose Obama had distributed weapons. He gave everybody a machine gun and said, now start marching east to Moscow. Somebody might have commented, this has already been tried with results that were not too good for us here. But that's essentially Obama. Now, McCain can't bring out 200,000 German lemmings. He cannot put a new face on U.S. imperialism in Africa. He does not represent the Luo tribe of Kenya, Sudan, Uganda, Congo, and Tanzania. He can't destabilize five countries just with his tribal background. So with McCain, it's an imperialism to be sure, but operating from a position of continued weakness. No plastic surgery, no facelift for imperialism under McCain. So if they're going to do this, they might as well do it from a weaker position. Otherwise, the chances for world war increase. The other point now, we'll get to it in a second, defeat the media. It's clear now who the media support. Anybody can see it. Back in a minute. Webster Toplin in Washington, D.C., speaking to you on the Friday after the Republican National Convention has wrapped up. Remember, in order to make sense out of any of these current events, there are two books you must have. Obama, the Postmodern Coup, The Making of a Manchurian Candidate. You can get this at Amazon.com. You can get it through any number of other places. You can buy it through Alex Jones. You can get it at Brave New Books in Austin, Texas. You can find it at any number of places. Amazon.com is convenient for many. The Making of a Manchurian Candidate. Barack Obama is a deeply troubled personality, the megalomaniac frontman for a postmodern coup by the intelligence agencies using fake polling, mobs of swarming adolescents. super rich contributors orchestrated media hysteria to short circuit normal politics and seize power. Now, he has been delayed. He has been slowed down, but he's still advancing. This is the absolute scariest alternative we have ever seen. An Obama presidency with a Democratic Congress plunges you into the full fury of the fascist corporate state. Let there be no confusion about this. This is several orders of magnitude worse than McCain's economic program. The benefit of McCain's economic program is that he will not be able to do any of it. It is dead on arrival with the Democratic Congress. If the president is McCain, all the economic issues become mixed up in the partisan wrangling, thank God, and the gridlock. McCain promises all of this reactionary Republican garbage. Fine. Laugh at it. It's all dead on arrival, given the complexion of the Congress, as the polls seem to indicate. But with Obama, that is completely different. Obama plus a Democratic Congress reduces the possibilities of resistance to a minimum. That's, again, think back to Mussolini, how he did it. You've got to destroy the institutions, weaken and hollow out and undermine the institutions that might resist fascism. That's what fascism does. That's what Barkey will do. And he'll start with the tremendous opportunity of pro-Obamazoid majorities in both houses, as far as we can see. And then he'll start putting fascist, left fascist, social fascist justices on the Supreme Court. That argument works both ways. And he'll get his nominees passed. He'll probably put, God knows, you know, the head of the Ford Foundation and the head of the Annenberg Fund will go and become Supreme Court justices, and they'll begin to legislate God knows what postmodern fascist, left fascist monstrosities. Now, with McCain, of course, it's gridlock. With Obama, it's going to be everything that David Rockefeller wants, everything that George Soros wants, everything that Robert Rubin wants, everything that Felix Rohatyn wants, everything that Morgan Stanley wants and Goldman Sachs, and above all, J.P. Morgan Chase, our friend Jamie Dimon. Everything that Jamie wants, they will get. And what they will want is to flay you alive. And actually, they'll be sending their orders to McCain if McCain gets in. But there you will have an opposite party Congress, and therefore some hope of partisan gridlock. Partisan gridlock is your friend. It is the best thing you can hope for under these circumstances. So I think we have to estimate that the McCain regime will be weaker in terms of imperialist warmongering policies, because it will continue the position of the U.S. isolated, hated, scorned, shunned, an international pariah with neocons running around and shooting their stupid yaps off, which again creates resistance. Unable to kick the Chinese out of Africa with the aging white face of McCain on the regime. And on the internal front, much weaker in strike breaking, much weaker in austerity possibilities. They will not allow equality of sacrifice. In other words, the Obama regime will say, we've all got to sacrifice, and we'll all sacrifice equally under left cover. And that gets you much, much further than the kind of stuff that McCain is offering with continuous tax cuts for the rich. So, if you don't like fascism and imperialism, you've got to bear these things in mind. There's also another angle. McCain, in his speech, practically declared war on the existing Republicans in Congress, that a lot of them are his personal enemies. You saw Mitch McConnell giving his speech, right, the corrupt senator from Kentucky who believes in winning elections based on money. And you saw Boehner, Congressman Boehner, the House Minority Leader. Those guys represent targets for McCain. If he's going to act out this petty bourgeois fetish against against earmarks and what he calls pork barrel and log rolling and corruption and all the other ways that legislatures have to exist. He's going to have to start vetoing bills, and he's going to get into conflict not only with the Democrats, not only with Pelosi and Reid and the rest of the Democrats, but also with his own Republicans. And he said, I am going to declare war on those me first, country second, business as usual, corrupt Republicans that we have sitting in the House and the Senate. In other words, McCain, notice, McCain does not target Republican governors or Republican state legislators. He targets Republicans in Congress. This sets up an additional conflict that makes McCain even weaker and therefore, from our point of view, better, because he'll be fighting not only the Democrats, he will lack the enthusiastic and loyal support of the congressional Republicans. The congressional Republicans will start triangulating between McCain in the White House and the Democratic Obama's, or by that time post-Obamazoid majority in the House and the Senate. Now, the other thing, of course, is Palin. Palin is interesting. Why? Because of this question of anti-corruption and reform, and this is real. She has been in the city council of Wasilla, Alaska, 4 years there, 4 years as mayor of Wasilla, Alaska. Remember, the states are schools of democracy, no doubt about it. We don't need more elitists and oligarchs from inside the Beltway, part of the Sally Quinn, Ben Bradley, corrupt Georgetown salon. Don't need more of them. But what she did was then to attempt to – she wanted to become lieutenant governor of Alaska. She ran for lieutenant governor. She was defeated. Then we had the corrupt Murkowski Stevens Young machine. This is Alaska has all the problems of a one-party state. Republicans have tended to dominate it in recent decades. That means Murkowski, Ted Stevens, and Congressman Young. Palin wanted to become the senator. Here's what happened. Murkowski was the senator. He got himself elected governor. That allowed him as governor to choose his own replacement as senator, and Palin interviewed for the post. But Murkowski was not going to choose Palin. He chose his own stupid daughter, Lisa Murkowski, who is now the corrupt, nepotistic Republican senator from Alaska. So at that point, Palin realized she was dealing with something very dirty. Now, as a consolation for not being put in the Senate, Palin then was given a post as the ethics commissioner on the Alaska State Oil and Gas Board. She found out that there was rampant corruption on the board, that the Republican state chairman and the former attorney general of the state were engaging in corruption. They were doing Republican Party business on state time. They were leaking key information to help various corporations get certain contracts they had to bid on. She told Murkowski there was corruption. Murkowski tried to shut her up. He threatened her. He said, you could even be fined. She then resigned with great éclat from the Ethics Commission post on the Oil and Gas Board. She denounced the Republican state chairman and the former attorney general. They were both forced to resign their posts, and the Republican state chairman was fined $12,000. That's very interesting. That, of course, is a dimension of personal courage you do not see with Obama. Very fundamental difference. When Obama was confronted with the filthy, dirty Illinois combine with Rezko and Blagojevich and Daley, he joined it. But Palin decided to fight the corrupt Murkowski Stevens Republican machine. We'll be back in a minute. Radio, our second hour here on the Friday, taping on the Friday after the Republican convention, and we've been going through the grim but not entirely hopeless situation in front of us, and as always, stressing the principle of activism. Get active or get radioactive. That's always been the case, now more than ever. Time to gear up, and especially a 60-day drive to defeat Obama at all costs, to perpetuate divided government, and to create the preconditions for an effective opposition for whatever emerges early next year. And above all, the programmatic question, the question of theoretical development. Enough of the backward Friedmanite, von Hayek, lunatic backwardness. Time to get back to the New Deal. That's the only way you get out of a depression. Hayek and Friedman will get you into a depression, and indeed they have. And Keynes will too, by the way, since he's a Malthusian. But Keynes won't get you out of a depression. Neither will Friedman, neither will von Hayek. But American system traditionalism will do the job. Hamiltonian dirigism, Lincoln-style dirigism, and the 20th century version is the New Deal economic system, which only works if you get a revival of the labor movement, because you've got to have a dimension of mass struggle involved. Now, we're just reviewing Palin. Palin, very interesting because of her challenge to the corrupt Republican state chairman and the corrupt Republican former state attorney general in Alaska, driving them out, getting them fired. Then she turns on Murkowski, the patron of this wing of the one-party state in Alaska. She then defeats Murkowski in the Republican primary. She becomes the governor. Now, Murkowski had seeded in 35 cronies, time servers, and other wheel horses of his corrupt regime, in particular a guy called Jim Clark, his former chief of staff. Palin fired these 35 hacks, cronies, and grafters from the administration. She also then turned her attention to Don Young. She sponsored a challenge to Don Young, which put him in great difficulty, trying to get rid of Don Young. And, of course, as a byproduct of this entire thing, you've got Ted Stevens, the senator, who has now been indicted. Now, interestingly, Stevens has just won his primary to continue as the Republican candidate for Senate in Alaska. That will be very interesting, the way that one plays out. Now, I'll talk about Alaska in the coming weeks, since I'm one of the small minority here in the lower 48 who's actually been there, and I think I have some appreciation of it. The mentality of Alaska, in a nutshell, is when we became a state, we were promised that we would not have rich elitists from Georgetown dictating the disposition of our natural resources, energy resources, and other job-creating necessities here in Alaska. You know, if you'd had the Georgetown corrupt, decadent, degenerate salons of people like Sally Quinn and Ben Bradley running, you know, the Homestead Act, you never would have had the closing of the frontier in the 1890s. It's only now that the decadent interest, the financier interest, has become so preponderant that we cannot get industrial capitalism going sufficiently, including in places like Alaska. But now you've got all this up. What do you get? That McCain has deep motives of conflict with the Republican congressional leadership. Palin is so radical in some respects that the reality of Palin cannot be spoken to the Republican convention. They have to say, she's someone who cut taxes. Well, she cut taxes for some, for a lot of ordinary working people, but she increased taxes on the oil cartel. There was also this question of the pipeline, and this is where we get something really interesting. The greatest work of civil engineering going on in North America right now is a $30 to $40 billion natural gas pipeline from the North Slope of Alaska all the way down through Canada. It's about 2,000 miles all the way to Washington State, where it then links up with the U.S. Nationwide natural gas distribution grid. The original deal was with BP. The oil companies, first of all, did not want this because it provided competition to them that they did not want. They continued to want financier super profits rather than increased production and jobs. So she had to fight them to get it approved. Then Murkowski had made a pledge to BP that they would have the monopoly. This is, of course, a British Empire corrupt financier operation with all kinds of, you know, green, what can we say, radical environmentalist extremist overtones. So she had to dump BP and then get a much smaller Canadian corporation that was much less able to dictate to the government of Alaska. And this is now being built. So this is tens of thousands of jobs and 30 to 40 billion. Now, I would say to Palin, great, you have provided a minimal kind of economic recovery program for Alaska in the form of this $30 to $40 billion pipeline. Every state in the union has a right to $20, $30, $40 billion worth of economic recovery investments. And, of course, we don't want to tax people for that. What we want to do is seize the Federal Reserve and say, guess what? We're now going to issue $1.5 trillion to $2 trillion of initial development money. This is going to be a new currency issue. It's going to be lent out at one-half of 1% interest for a 30-year maturity, and we're going to use that to finance development projects of this type in every state of the union. Above all, the reconstruction of the entire transportation infrastructure, the reconstruction of a magnetic levitation freight and passenger railway system for the entire United States, then beginning to reach around the world. Essentially, you can touch every relevant landmass of the world in this way. Hook up to that. And then, since McCain talks about 45 nuclear plants, that's practically one for every state that's likely to want it, build those. Start them all at once and finance them with one-half of 1% credit that will be forced out of the Federal Reserve. In other words, no more Federal Reserve money for bailouts of Bear Stearns or Fannie Mae or Goldman Sachs or Citibank or Lehman Brothers. No. But channel that money into jobs and production at low interest rates, one-half of 1%, maybe 1% at the very most, and 30 to 40-year maturities so that we get a long-term stable debt structure. She also says, Palin says, that she broke the control of the oil cartel over the state of Alaska. Great. We're sitting here in the lower 48. We are being strangled by Wall Street. So, Palin, why don't you use your Alaska method to break the control of the Wall Street finance oligarchs over just about every phase of national life? Take on the finance oligarchs and fight them. Generally speaking, the anti-corruption crusade, the anti-earmark, and all the rest of this stuff has grave ideological limitations. But with Palin, this question of the $40 billion natural gas pipeline and the implications of that provide a window that could lead into the world of New Deal-style economic recovery programs. But the point is that you've got to seize control of the financing mechanism. It's got to be federal credit, the Federal Reserve nationalized, made a Bureau of the Treasury, and instructed to issue, let's say, $2 trillion initially of extremely low interest, extremely long-term development credits that can only go for physical, tangible production, in this case, infrastructure investment. So I guess out of all this derived the following indications for the next 2 months. First of all, defeat Obama at all costs. People say, who should I vote for? That's the least of it. Gear up now. You should be able to move not your one miserable little vote that you have yourself. You should be able to move 10, 50, 100, 1,000, 10,000, a million votes, depending on your level of energy. If you make some calls to talk radio, you can begin to stir the pot. Remember, it makes more sense to put this effort into places like Pennsylvania, Michigan, Ohio, Virginia, New Hampshire, Nevada, New Mexico. This is where you've got to channel the effort. So if you're in some place like Vermont, then go across to New Hampshire because your effort will be much greater. We'll be back in a minute.
Are you tired of searching for Great Talk Radio? Well, search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Thank you.
Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. Webster Tarpley, your host here in Washington, D.C. And we are now honored to be joined once again by Phil Berg, Esquire. He is a former Deputy Attorney General of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. He is a former Democratic candidate for Governor of Pennsylvania and for Senator from Pennsylvania, former Democratic State Chairman of the very important Collar County of Philadelphia, Montgomery County, Pennsylvania, former member of the Democratic State Committee of Philadelphia, and as people who have followed our broadcast now know, two weeks ago today, Phil Berg went into federal court for the Eastern District of Pennsylvania in Philadelphia and filed a civil lawsuit in the federal court to get Barack Obama or Barry Sotero or whatever other alias he goes under thrown off the ballot, in effect, or denied the possibility of pursuing his candidacy for president because he's not constitutionally qualified, not a natural born, and not a citizen. So we're glad to welcome Phil back. We hope to have Phil back every week in the time frame now leading up to the election to give us a progress report. Now, Phil, you're saying that the summons that we've been that you had been waiting for has now been served. Can you bring us up to speed?
Sure. The after I filed the complaint on August 21st, the next step is that the clerk of courts issues a summons, and the summons is served with the complaint. For some reason, we never received it. Who knows why? But we filed for a reissuance of the summons, which was issued to us on Wednesday of this week. And I personally went to the court to pick it up so there would be no problem in the mailing of it. And I immediately sent it down to our process server in Washington, D.C. And yesterday, Thursday, or not yesterday, 2 days ago, on Thursday, the service was made at the Democratic National Committee at 12 noon and around 1:30 p.m. at the office of Senator Barack Obama. His the service processor told us that previous complaints have been served at his Senate office. So service has now been made, and I'm ready for the next step.
Wonderful. That's already a big step. So it means that that Barkey knows that that his constitutional qualifications for the office are now not just open to question, but being questioned in the federal court. Where are things likely to go from here?
Well, first off, he now has been officially served, but on August 22nd, I made sure personally that fax copies were sent to the Democratic National Committee, the Federal Election Commission, and to Senator Barack Obama. And so I'm sure he's been aware of it before that. In addition, we had an explosion on our website, which is obamacrimes.com, obamacrimes.com. There's been an absolute explosion. As of yesterday, it's been over 7.9 million hits on our website. In addition to that, there's been an explosion on the Internet. Any place you look, it's there. So they're well aware of this complaint. And the reason I mention that is that the Obama machine is so well oiled that when someone says something they don't like on a blog, they are immediately responding. And when McCain says something they don't agree with, they, within hours at the most a day, they are responding, even to the point of putting out a counter videotape to counter something that McCain has out. So it's very interesting now that we're now 2 weeks later and there's not been a word out from the Obama camp. And in my opinion, as every minute, hour, and day goes by with no response, I think the icing's on the cake that we're right and they're just trying to avoid this thing. The next step would be I'm preparing a motion for expedited discovery, which hopefully I'll probably file on Monday, and thereafter ask the judge, who I had asked at the temporary restraining order hearing, if he would consider a telephone conference call regarding expedited discovery, and he said yes, he would entertain such a call. So hopefully that'll be early next week, because I think that this issue is imperative to our whole constitutional government. More important, it's pressing because there's an election coming up in November, And if I am correct, and I really believe I am 99.99%, that Senator Barack Obama has committed a fraud on the citizens, on all the citizens of the United States, and especially to those 18 plus million people who voted for him in the primary, and also the people that raised over $200 million for him. You cannot tell me that he does not know if this is correct or incorrect. And if I was Barack Obama and these charges were incorrect, I, myself, or a spokesperson, would have issued a statement that Mr. Berg's suit has no value to it. He's got 24 hours to withdraw it, or I would sue him for defamation. And notice no remark has come forward. And I think that indicates that we're on the right track.
So Obama is stonewalling with an absolute cone of silence as far as this suit is concerned. We want to congratulate you on getting practically 8 million people informed about this. That's already a tremendous achievement in itself. Do you know what law firm or what lawyer is representing Obama?
No, I don't know yet. Now, I'll be curious if we get an entry of appearance by someone at this point, or they're just a store. They formally have 60 days to respond, and 60 days would take us right up to Election Day. I think that will be an injustice if they do that, so I'm going to hope to force the issue through the court that this is such a major issue, which it is, and not just because Phil Berg and myself is going after this. This is a major constitutional issue. Am I right or am I wrong? They have not put forth anything to indicate I'm wrong. Now, also, there's what's called in the federal courts a Rule 26 disclosure. That means that each party is to turn over as soon as possible to the other side appropriate documentation regarding the matter. That means that technically I don't even have to go for discovery. Within a short period of time, Barack Obama should be turning over all the proof that disputes, you know, my position here, and we'll see what happens on that. But I see a delay tactic coming. I see, if I'm correct, I see what the scenario I see happening, them trying to ignore the matter, unless I can get the courts to really force the whole issue, ignore the matter. Whenever the ruling comes down, he's hoping he gets elected in November and then just waits till January, gets sworn in, and then says, you know, I'm in office. We would have to file, someone has to file an impeachment process, but then he would say that the lackluster, gutless Congress would probably never file an impeachment proceeding against him.
Hang on for just a second. We'll be back in a minute with Phil Berg of Philadelphia reporting on the legal battle to stop Obama from carrying out his postmodern coup. Crisis Radio. It's right now, as we tape the program, it's the Friday after the Republican convention, and we're talking with Philip J. Berg, Esquire of Philadelphia, who is the protagonist of this extremely important lawsuit to force Obama to disgorge his birth certificate and proof of citizenship if he has it. So, Phil, you're basically saying they're stalling, and that, of course, they pay a price for that in terms of public opinion, in terms of the propaganda impact, with 8 million people already coming to your site. Last time I looked, you were on about 50,000 websites that I could determine, right, using search engine criteria. So the other question then is, can you give us an update in terms of your personal efforts to spread the word about this suit?
Well, sure. I've been, I'm honored to be on your show weekly, and I'll try to stay on there weekly. I've been on about 40 radio shows all across the country. In Canada, I'm going to be on another radio show in Canada tonight. I've been on a couple TV shows in local markets, Cincinnati, other places. I'm in my car. I don't have the list in front of me. I'm taking phone calls nonstop from people across this country are calling me. They've gotten emails. They want to know, is this for real? And I say yes, and they're thankful. They're praising me. You're a patriot and everything. And it's acknowledgments I don't need other than, you know, thank you for doing this. But the response has been unbelievably good. I mean, we probably have a 98% positive response. You know, you always get someone out there negative, but the negatives are so extremely low here. And it's just, you know, some people who have nothing else to do, and they're actually weird statements that are being made. But the response through the Internet, the response through our website, the response to telephone calls, the response by faxes, attorneys. I've been involved in many cases over the years. I've had the offer of help, but I think it's over 15 attorneys now have offered assistance throughout the country. It's really amazing. And you're correct at the point that it has to have some kind of a negative effect on the senator if we're not commenting. If I'm wrong, let's put the evidence up there or allow me through the federal court to go to Hawaii to see the vault copy via ULT, which would be a copy of the original birth certificate on file. Allow me to go wherever you took your oath of allegiance with a camera crew to film it. If those documents are there and I can see from the original source, where they have not been ordered, you know, I'll withdraw the suit and go away. But I don't believe that, and this challenge I've been stating now for 2 weeks, I'm not sure that, I'm pretty sure they don't exist, otherwise he would have done something like that. I'm not saying counsel has, for Barack Obama or DNC is delaying it. We didn't officially serve them until Thursday of this past week. So technically, you know, they don't have to do anything until they're officially served, which they have now been. But, you know, they could have contacted me before, you know, the official service because, as I stated, you know, they received fax copies from me. If they're not aware of this lawsuit, then there's something wrong with all their bloggers and everything else because it's everywhere on the Internet. Like you say, you found it about over 50,000 websites have picked this up. It's really the most exciting case I've been involved with as far as how quickly it has spread. And I think the reason is that there's nothing more important than our Constitution, and that's why I'm doing this. Our Constitution has to be followed. And this is a constitutional, we're entering into a constitutional crisis if there's a delay in ruling in this case, and hopefully the judge will understand that.
Absolutely right. A constitutional crisis if we don't get some kind of an expedited, useful time, in other words, resolution. Let me ask you again now, is there any way for you to track lawsuits in states? Because, again, it seems to me that you're going to find at least some Republicans in some states where they can, well, you know, find a possible sympathetic reaction in the state judiciary, that this could be also filed as a suit saying, Mr. Secretary of State, you know, of Alabama or Mississippi or whatever, you know, any other state, that you've got to go out of your way and make sure that the guy is qualified to be president. Otherwise, you have to throw him off the ballot.
I've gotten just today. I just got a letter, and I didn't. The gentleman wrote me, and he said I can't contact everyone, but he and I didn't look at it. It was a thick letter. I don't know how many he had contacted, but he had been writing already to the Secretary of State of a number of states, and I know people are inquiring to do that. I'm not sure how many letters have gone to Secretary of State or how many, if any, lawsuits have been filed yet. That's an interesting follow-up. But I think it really comes back for the expediting of litigation. It's really my case should, and not just that it's me, but if we can resolve it at this level, it should take care of everything. But I really think that people should start calling. I can't do this, I mean, and your listeners, I can't do it or suggest it, but perhaps you can suggest to them that they, you know, start contacting the Obama offices and find out, demand the truth. I mean, don't put up this document, it's called Certification of Live Birth, which our experts have indicated has been altered, at the bottom of that document says, if altered, there's this is not a valid document, you know, put up the birth certificate. You know, have a certified copy put forth by the birth records office, whatever it's called, in Hawaii. And then also put up the other documents, the oath of allegiance, which I stated, to counter the argument that I'm putting forth. And, you know, he doesn't have to go right away, but I think as a candidate for president, I think he owes, perhaps not through the lawsuit, but he owes an obligation to all the citizens of this country to clear this issue as soon as possible. Because otherwise, I don't think this is not helping in the campaign. If I'm wrong, I'll say I'm sorry and I'll walk away. But I want to say, as many of the people who have now supported me, and even financially, people are now helping out on the cause. Like one radio talk show host said he had contacted a law firm in San Francisco to file this type of action, and they wanted a retainer of $50,000. So we're not even close to that now. People have donated, and I'm not knocking, because I've taken the year 2008, asked for $20.08 or even $2.08, and a number of people have contributed that. And whatever people can give is fine, even if they give a quarter or a dollar, whatever they can do. We've raised about $2,500 as of this time, and there are costs involved. And if we have to go to Hawaii or Kenya and or Indonesia, there's going to be costs involved. You know, we have filing fees, we serve process. My telephone bill is going through the roof, but, you know, I'm going for it no matter if I don't collect another dime at this point, because this is such an important issue.
Absolutely. Now, we've just heard a big blather about the vetting of vice presidential candidates and a lot of pompous posturing and hypocrisy from the controlled corporate media, all in the tank for Obama, talking about the inadequate vetting of the Republican vice presidential candidate. And what you're proposing is, let's get back to the vetting of the presidential candidate. Let me ask you one more question. In terms of the ballots, right, I think some Republican interests may be holding back until paper ballots are printed, but I think that probably starts next week, in the sense that some states already begin absentee voting, the idea of getting an absentee ballot, early voting as it's sometimes called. I think there are some places where that starts already in the middle of September. By the third week in September, it's certainly there. Do you have any idea of that timetable?
No, I don't, but I think it's soon, and we're at critical times here. And I really think that it's incumbent upon the senator and his staff to come forth with either I'm right or I'm wrong.
I want to thank Phil Berg. Thank you very much, Phil. Come on again next week and give us a further report. Congratulations on getting these papers served. The website, ObamaCrimes.com, give a substantial contribution. Thank you very much, Phil.
Thank you very much, Webster.
Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. This is Webster Topley speaking from Washington, D.C. Just a couple of notes on non-domestic politics. In Ukraine, the IMF-NATO puppet coalition has split, as we reported already last week and the week before. There is now an open split between Yushchenko, who is the heart and soul of the NATO Brzezinski, Soros, U.S.-dominated puppet coalition. And Tymoshenko, the gas princess, has now become a progressive force. Tymoshenko turned into her opposite sometime during her Sardinian vacation, when she obviously struck a deal with the pro-Russian side, which is, of course, a significant part of Ukrainian politics. I would point out Natalia Vitrenko, V-I-T-R-E-N-K-O, Natalia Vitrenko, V-I-T-R-E-N-K-O, is a patriotic Ukrainian politician who works for a confederation, I guess, with the Russian Federation, and the same thing going on, of course, in Belarus, which would do a great deal to kick the NATO provocateurs out of Kiev. Yushchenko has now been dumped. In other words, the Brzezinski-controlled puppet regime in Kiev has collapsed. And it'd be interesting to see exactly how that worked with the timing of the Cheney visit over there. Cheney, of course, is on a warmonger tour. Cheney, basically after having spent a couple of months with nothing to do with his life, has now gotten a new existence as a running dog for the new Brzezinski policy. This is no longer bin Laden al-Qaeda war on terror. This is now the Brzezinski anti-Russian policy. The other thing, of course, is that as this week comes to an end, you've got tremendous instability in the markets. This is now very severe. Lehman Brothers yesterday, Thursday, lost 10.5%. You have Merrill Lynch down 7.5%, J.P. Morgan down 4.5% in one day, Lehman Brothers down 10.5% in one day, Citibank down almost 7% now at 18.30, and the deeper it goes into the teens, the closer it is to blowing up. Union Bank of Switzerland down 8.5%. Washington Mutual down a little bit over 8%. Morgan Stanley down 4.33%. Goldman Sachs down 4%. Gross of PIMCO says he will not buy the paper being issued by these troubled banks. And remember, we're operating under the August 19th forecast from Kenneth Rogoff, the former chief economist of the IMF, that a whopper is coming, a big investment bank or a big commercial bank in Wall Street will blow. Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac also in deep, deep trouble. So, again, where does it leave you? I propose the following policy. First of all, stop Obama at all costs. Whatever else you do or don't do, work to stop Obama. Stop focusing on your miserable little vote and see yourself as somebody who can move public opinion. You've just heard from Phil Berg. There's a guy who's moving hundreds of thousands or maybe even millions of votes, depending on how the outcome works. You can do the same thing. Live like him, in other words. So get out there and fight. And fight means, I would say, work in any way possible to undermine Obama, especially in those key swing states, Pennsylvania, Ohio, Michigan, New Hampshire, Colorado, Nevada, New Mexico, and anywhere else. But focus on the swing states. Don't waste your time on Vermont, because that's going to go for Obama. That's a paradise of oligarchs and rich elitists. So you can forget that. But what opens up is that possibility. Now, concerning other offices, naturally, if you have a meritorious candidate like Craig Hill in Vermont, you want to focus your energies into supporting somebody like Craig Hill for the Congress. But other than that, you want to have a Democrat in Congress, because what you're hoping for is the defeat of Obama, and that, openly said, that means that you're going to get McCain, Palin, but you're going to need a Congress able to check them, and that means check them on economics and indeed check them on the warmonger policies that also would be present in that administration. So again, the goal is divided government. If it's going to be McCain, Palin, then make sure there's a robust congressional majority for the opposing party, and hope for gridlock, and then get ready to work for gridlock. Because if you had a McCain-Palin administration with a Democratic Congress, you would then want to go into the highways and byways of the Democratic Congress and begin to push them towards a radicalization, towards New Deal measures, towards blocking McCain, obviously, on these reactionary Republican things that he promises to do, block him on the warmonger side, mobilize the anti-war base of the Democratic Party once they wake up from the post-Obama hangover, and generally look for the emergence of a congressional opposition. Now, this is where Clinton comes in. Mrs. Clinton now says she wants to, or apparently wants to, run for majority leader in the U.S. Senate. That would make her the leader of an opposition against McCain. Now, Mrs. Clinton has to do a couple of things, though. It will not do to continue this triangulation, this Mark Penn stuff that we had last year and into this year. It's going to have to be a sharp New Deal turn by Clinton if she's going to get anywhere. She will no longer be able to run on the woman vote. That will not do, because she'll be facing Palin. Therefore, she is going to have to get serious on the issues, and that means in effect, a sharp left turn, a sharp turn towards economic populism. Forget cultural populism. We don't care whether you eat moose or whether you eat brie and chablis. This ultimately doesn't count. Naturally, we use these things here as part of the propaganda and polemics. But in the final analysis, it's what's your economic policy? Cultural populism is for suckers and dupes. Economic populism gets you results. It gets you out of a world economic depression. It's got to be New Deal economic populism. So if Clinton wants to compete in a world now populated by Palin and others, Clinton will have to take a sharp New Deal left populist economic turn. And that means breaking with Wall Street, not easy to do. But if you become majority leader, you're no longer tied so much to the Wall Street community. You've got broader economic interests that you can address, at least in theory, and then get ready for the obvious shipwreck of anybody coming in, any administration that does not implement New Deal economic populism will be swept away by the Depression. Just that simple. It's a choice between national survival and any other kind of economics. The New Deal economics are the key to national and world survival. There is no other way out of a crisis. It's been tried before. Herbert Hoover talked all the stuff about free markets and free enterprise and don't interfere with the free market and all that. And he gave you the full fury of the market, and the result was a world economic depression that got worse and worse, made of course worse by the British. But that will be the same thing now. Nothing has changed in that regard. So it's either New Deal or bottomless depression, ever deeper, ever deeper. So maybe Mrs. Clinton can learn that lesson. I would also say if Clinton does not learn that lesson, I hope somebody else will. And we've got to be looking for somebody else who will learn that lesson. So again, oppose Obama in every way possible. However, remember that your goal is not one-party rule. A lot of the problems that we've had in the decade that's now moving towards its conclusion is a result of one-party rule. Remember that in 03, 04, 05, and 06 into 07, we had one-party rule. Even under the first couple of years of Bush, the Republicans continued to control the House of Representatives, but the Democrats, thanks to Jeffords, had control of the Senate for a while, which they didn't use well. Then they lost it again. We need divided government. So stop Obama, but stop him in a way that perpetuates divided government and partisan gridlock, and hope then that an actual viable New Deal economic populist alternative can be developed. And we'll be following that through the coming months. Remember to buy Obama the Postmodern Coup from Amazon.com. See you next week.